This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hi, so today I'm speaking with Elizabeth Rees, the founder of Eliza Eliza. Eliza Eliza is a bag and accessories brand based in Cardiff, Wales, aiming to empower you to start conversations about the causes you care about. And the hashtag Elizabeth uses for her business is Carry Your Cause. So we spoke a lot about the causes that Elizabeth supports through her business, how she does that, how she's formed partnerships, as well as, of course, all the details about how she designs and creates her products. I thought this was a really interesting a fascinating conversation, as they all are. Elizabeth is probably the guest that I've spoken to the most about the causes she supports and how she does that, and I found it all super interesting, and I really hope you do too. So I would love now to introduce you to Elizabeth.
Well, hi, thank you so much for being here.
Hiya, Vicky.
So could we start by you please giving an introduction to yourself, your business and what you sell?
Thank you so much for inviting me on the podcast. So I'm Elizabeth Rees and I'm founder and owner of Eliza Eliza. And I make sustainably conscious bags and accessories that aim to start conversations about the causes that we all care about. So that's anything from gynecological cancer to gender equality and endangered turtles and many more.
Thank you. And I'm right in thinking, aren't I, that you make your bags yourself?
I do, yes. So I've always started made bags myself. And I started making them when I was on maternity leave. And I needed I wanted something to keep my nappies and wet wipes and bits and pieces in when I was out and about, rather than taking a massive changing bag. So I'd done a bit of sewing in the past and decided to make a small pouch with some fabric that I found and just use it to carry the nappies in between my changing bags and put under the buggy, just to have a little bit less to carry out and about. But yeah, I make them all myself.
That makes total sense, because those big change, I think the big changing bags, just kind of, there's something about them that just makes you want to fill them, because they are so big. It sort of works the other way, doesn't it? You put so much in there because you can.
Oh, absolutely. And if I've got a bag, I mean, my mum, it's a joke in our family that I always had a bag with me when I was younger, and however big it is, I will always fill it. And I think especially when you're a first time mum, you just fill your changing bag with everything you might just need, and you'll put an extra couple of nappies in there even though you'll never need them really, and muslins galore, and it was just really useful to have this little pouch that I could carry around with me. And a lot of people started commenting on how useful they were, and so I'd make some for them maybe, and it just started from there.
Yeah, so that leads me on really nicely to what inspired you to start Eliza Eliza, because obviously it sounds like, first of all, you were making bags for yourself and maybe for friends. So what inspired you to actually start a business?
So going right back, before I had children, I actually came from a background of teaching. I'm trained as a secondary geography teacher, and when I went on my maternity leave, I I wanted something a bit extra to do just to keep myself busy. And my friends had told me about this Roald Dahl fabric, and it's a beautiful print. And I started making these cushions and selling them online, selling them through Etsy. And they were cushions with pockets in them. You could put the books in, and it just snowballed and started growing. Because I'd done that sewing, I'd made these bags. And because I realized that the pocket cushions couldn't really grow into a business long term, and to a scale that I would like to, because I didn't really want to go back to teaching, I understood that it wasn't a passion that I had and wanted to do for the rest of my life. I've been selling these cushions online and through Etsy in marketplaces. Lost my train of thought. Found this whole world online that I never really knew existed. Started making the bags and wanted to go down another business route. Sorry, I've really lost my train of thought here.
Oh, that's no problem at all. So we're talking about, so you started off selling on Etsy. So that's amazing. So that was before you even had this business. That was just you, was it? Just selling the cushions. So something completely separate was what you're doing now, really. Even though it sounds like it was the start of it.
Yes, it was. I suppose this was 10 years ago. 9 years ago with my first son. So it's been a very long journey to get into where I am now, and I've had two other children since. The bags, I'd been making these pouches, decided I wanted to grow the business, went online to see what other fabrics I could use. I really wanted to find a linen fabric, perhaps, to have something with a bit more that could be used with different outfits. And I found this beautiful hemp that was woven in the UK. And I love the idea of it being British and sustainable. And actually, when I first saw the cost of the fabric per meter, I was like, oh my goodness, it's very expensive. But I thought, I'll just go for it, see how it turned out. And I loved it and started using them as all the time, because they could go with any outfit. And when you're a mother, you want something that's nice and easy. So having a bag that I could just pick up and use to go down to the pub with my friends or go out and about just to pop to the shops was just so useful. What's really good about the hemp as well is that it's quite hard wearing as well. You can throw it in in your bag, and I could use it to organize my bag as well.
I don't know much about hemp actually, so what this might be a really silly question, but what other fabric would you say hemp is most like? So I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever seen it I've seen your products online, but in real life I don't think I've seen a hemp bag. So is it like a canvasy kind of material?
It is, yeah. It's slightly different. So the hemp I use is actually a mix of hemp and cotton. It's a lot more hemp it can be quite a rough fabric depending on how it's processed, and there's lots of different types of hemp. Unfortunately, hemp gets a really bad press because it has an association with marijuana, and it's actually made from the cannabis sativa plant, but it's a completely different species to the marijuana. So it doesn't contain any what they call like psychoactive chemicals. It's the THC that is what makes you get high if you use marijuana, but hemp hasn't got those properties. But the actual fabric is, you might find it a little bit rougher and textured initially, but it does soften over time. And actually, it's with the improvement of processing of hemp, it does mean that we can use it for things like shirts and other more delicate or clothing accessories that need more delicate fabrics, which is really good because hemp is just the most wonderful fiber. It's one of the most sustainable fabrics that we've got and we know in the world, because it uses a lot less water. It almost grows like a weed. You can grow it almost anywhere in the world. But it's just got this association with marijuana, which has meant that it's been held back in how we can grow it and where we can grow it in the world.
It sounds like the hemp that's grown for fabric, for example, is different. Is that right? It's a different plant?
Yeah, it's a different species. This is what I've learned over time, which is can be very basic, but yeah, it's different to marijuana. It's got different properties. I think it's something like hemp THC has got to be under like 0.3%. Anything over that is deemed illegal to grow. And even hemp itself in the UK, you need to get a special license from the Home Office to grow it. And they're really hard to get hold of, really expensive. The farms have to be vetted depending on their size and the location. But it is improving. And I think there's more understanding on how useful hemp can be and what it can be used for, and because it has so many environmental properties or positives, it's been used and discovered more and more on how useful it can be.
That's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that, because I knew nothing about it. And I think it's really great that you can source it in the UK as well, because that's not always the case for fabric.
Yeah, I mean, the hemp I use, it's Romanian and French hemp, and then they bring it over to here because there are so many problems of growing hemp in the country. They bring it over and it's woven in Lancashire and Yorkshire. Like I said, it's woven with a cotton, organic cotton as well, so that it does help keep it slightly softer than if you just used hemp. But the hope is that eventually they will use hemp grown in this country. It's just so difficult. In fact, I mean, hemp goes back, it's one of the oldest fabrics known to man and women. They've used it for years and years and years. I mean, I think there's it's been found 8,000 years ago, I think, is the oldest piece of fabric that's been found, and that was hemp. It's been used in the UK very much for rope and sails. As the British grew their empire, there was a huge push to grow hemp. In fact, I think at one point there was a time where it was illegal not to grow hemp, and all farmers had to produce a certain amount of hemp on their farming land. But then, because there'd been associations with marijuana, it was all made illegal in the early 20th century, and it wasn't legalized again until I think it was about the 1990s. But yeah, the more I find out about it, the more I love it, and it's got so many properties which make it great as a bag, because it's antibacterial, it's an antifungal. So with anything like a bag or clothes, it's great for it. It's not, if it gets dirty, it almost cleans itself. It's self-cleaning, which is really useful. And then there's so many other things it can be used for. I mean, I've heard they've made bricks from hemp.
Amazing.
It is. It's they can use it for. I mean, I suppose there's other because of so many properties it has and it and the nutrients it has, it can be ingested as well. So it can be, you might have seen hemp oil in supermarkets. And so every part of the plant can be used effectively, which is another reason why it's such a useful farming and agricultural plant.
I know what you mean. Yeah, because I see what you can tell. It sounds like there's just no waste, which is fantastic, because with most plants there's like some element of waste.
Yeah, they can use it as a rotation crop as well, which because it almost puts nutrients back into, I mean, I don't know complete the science of it, but it puts nutrients back into the to land, which is obviously fantastic, and means that it's as a farm, it's not an area of land that's been left to do nothing. It can be making money while it's it's adding nutrients into the soil again.
Yeah, and it's
the other thing is, I mean, it acts as a carbon sink, so it takes in a lot more carbon dioxide than many trees do, which is fantastic for the reducing climate change. And it's a wonder. The more I find out about it, the better, and the more I want to use it. And I would love to one day just use hemp. I mean, that would be the ideal situation if because at the moment I still use cotton for where my, because I have designs printed onto to cotton to use on the linings of my bags and accessories. But one day it would be amazing if they were made from hemp. That's the ideal situation.
Yeah, and we'll talk a bit more about the linings of your products later, mm-hmm. as well, because they're obviously very unique. and we'll talk about those and the causes that you're supporting for your products as well. So it does sound like hemp is an ideal product for making bags. So once you found a fabric that you wanted to work with and you were excited to use, so what happened then? Talk us through, you just started making the bags and then you found the hemp. What happened next?
So I started selling them through Etsy again. And for a long time, I sold them through online and Etsy. And the reason the lining was I use patterns. To be honest, I didn't have many plain fabrics, so I just started using what I had, and so I used the fabrics inside. And I suppose maybe it was just an instinct. I wanted to be able to give back. I found this attraction towards raising a bit of money initially for a charity as part of producing the bags. And I discovered the first charity I started working with was a charity called Unseen, and they work with survivors of modern day slavery. They are based in Bristol, and I approached them and said, oh, please can I just work with you, partner with you, and help raise some money for you. And they were more than happy to work with me. And then it must have been about 6 months later, a year later, I said, well, what I'd love to do is perhaps make the line and the design a bit more meaningful. So I said that I would look for an artist that could perhaps put together a design that would relate to what they were doing. And we had a lot of ideas. We discussed things that we could focus on the design. But what Unseen really like to do is promote the positives of what they are doing as a charity, rather than looking back to the slavery point. And I actually used butterflies as part of that collection. And the reason being is because they have a brilliant program called the Butterfly Program, and it works on with safe houses for women and helps support women, gives them help with counselling, with integration back into communities. It almost just maybe just giving them a pack of clothes or toiletries when they come into this safe house, all the little things we don't really tend to think about, because many of these women have perhaps come over to this country if they've been trafficked over from another country and have nothing else apart from the clothes that they're wearing when they are rescued. So the safe houses work with these women, and it's called the Butterfly Program, so that's why I've used butterflies. And yeah, it just went from then. I think the second charity was the Eve Appeal, which you've probably seen. My Eve Appeal collection is called the V Collection and has vulvas inside. And the reason being is because the Eve Appeal worked to raise awareness for the 5 gynecological cancers, which I will remind, because I remind everyone what they are, because a lot of people don't realise there's 5 gynecological cancers. So there's ovarian, cervical, womb, vaginal and vulval. And the idea with the V Collection is that it raises awareness and starts conversation. So a lot of people might look at the vulvas and feel like they're a bit explicit, but to me the idea is that it starts that conversation, and that's the most important part of what the bags, or I hope that the bags do. And then on the side they also raise money for the charity as well.
Those were the designs I actually, when I was looking at your products, when we first started speaking, those were the ones that really stood out to me, because they are really unique and really eye-catching. So I can see they're definitely a conversation starter. I can definitely see that if you had that bag, someone might say, oh, what's that for, or what does that mean? So I think it will definitely be achieving that, as well as you say, raising some money as well.
Mm-hmm. The V Collection, I mean, it's certainly my most popular collection, because I think it is the one that stands out from the rest. It's the one that's in the past it's been shared by Gillian Anderson, and influencers. Emily Clarkson shared it when she brought it. I made these masks in lockdown, because one of the reasons I had it inside the bag as well is I thought it would be, it's like a secret it'd been in the bag, but it's not showing off, that you can show it to whoever you want and start the conversation. It doesn't have to be completely out there. But then when I started doing face masks a couple of years ago, post-lockdown, people would quite happily wear them on their faces. And but I think the design even my mum thought they were bugs. I think it's not obvious that they are. It's one of those, are they what I think they are? And there are lots of different design colors, so it means it sort of represents everyone, and it's just starts a conversation. And
so I will make sure I put a link to your shop in the show notes so people can actually and take a look at this design, because obviously we've talked about it a lot. It's good to actually go and see it now so they can see what we're talking about. So did you find an artist to work with to come up with these designs for you?
So the vulva collection, when I did that, it was because I'd actually found the design before I approached the Eve Appeal. And the artist I found, I work quite a lot with a fabric producer called Spoonflower, and they print onto fabrics, and there's lots of different fabric types you can print onto. So I print onto like an organic cotton sateen. You can print onto, poly cottons or heavier canvases, and because it's smaller quantities, so you go onto a Spoonflower and there's all these different designs you can choose from. And I happened to come across this vulva design. And so I approached the artist and asked her. She's based, it's a lady called Tayshia, and she's based in Canada, which is another reason it's brilliant, because you can use people from all over the world. And what's really good about using Spoonflower is that every time I buy from Spoonflower, the artist gets a percentage of that, which is really good as well if you are not wanting to buy the rights straight out from an artist, because sometimes with artists you'll buy the rights to use their designs, but whereas with Spoonflower you just pay every time you use the design if you have an agreement with them. And I think the fact that I could turn around to Tayshia and say it's going to help raise awareness, it's going to help raise money for my charity, I think that was another reason why she was more than happy for me to start like that. I think last time I looked, it the collection, it's raised over £3,000 for the Eva Peel, I think the artists are really, really encouraging and wanting for me to use their designs, because it's given back in a way that they want to support as well.
That's amazing. I think it's really lovely that you're able to support an artist and support a charity. And yeah, that's just really nice, isn't it? How mm-hmm. how that works. So where with this site, I guess the only downside is, does that mean potentially other people could use the same designs that you're using?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't want to keep secret over using Spoonflower, because I think if people want to, that yes, they can go and use. I mean, I have an agreement with the artist to use the designs on a commercial side. And I think it's important that people understand, even just for a matter of politeness, that it's important they go and ask an artist if they can use it, if they're not using it just for personal use. But yeah, I mean, if you go into Spoonflower and search anything, it's a brilliant site, and I think they're really supportive of artists and product makers alike.
Yeah, it sounds like it, because it's great that you were able to contact the artist directly, so it wasn't like a platform in between you and her. That mm-hmm. sounds that's really nice, because there are lots of sites out there where there's sort of a disconnect between you and the person who's created the art or what the design or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So this sounds really nice that you could sort of actually speak to the artist and tell her what you were using it for. And yeah, I really like that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, actually all of the designs I print, I use Spoonflower, and quite a few of them I found through Spoonflower. Like I said, it means that you can access people who are, I think the lady that Angelique, who produces my turtle fabric, she's based in South Africa, and I might never have known about her if I hadn't been on Spoonflower. But it's really useful.
And so you mentioned earlier about people, you mentioned Gillian Anderson and Emily Clarkson sort of sharing your products. So was that something deliberate, that you were trying to get influencers or people to use your products, or is that something that happened organically? I'm just being curious.
Both by accident, really. So Gillian Anderson had been a gift for a friend was going to see a show she'd done, and I sort of said, oh, can you just see if you can give her this purse. I was hoping she might make share it on a story, but she did a post on it in the end, which was brilliant for me on Instagram, so it meant it stayed there forever. It's incredible when if you have an influencer with a good following, it's incredible the difference it can make as a business. And it kicked off completely overnight, and I sold out, and it was wonderful. With Emily Clarkson, she'd actually bought the face mask herself, because she works quite closely with the Eva Peel, and she'd seen them promote the face mask, so that was wonderful. And that was really nice, because she'd bought the mask herself and then shared it.
That is really nice. And so at this, what stage were you selling on your own website as well as on Etsy? Were you yeah, when did that happen?
So fairly early on, I switched to my own website. I'd been speaking to a friend of mine, and she almost encouraged me to switch to a website rather than using Etsy. And I actually started using Squarespace, because I mean it's very easy to, they've got all these templates, and you just almost and I, having coming from a background which I wasn't very technically educated, it was much easier for me to be able to just put in pictures and a bit of text and the information that was needed and upload it straight away. So I would encourage anyone to use anything like Squarespace to, if they wanted to start a website. Etsy is really useful, I think, when you initially start, a great way to get your, to dip your feet in, to dip your foot in, so to speak. But I think a website, it's yours, it's your website, it no one can take it away from you. Whereas I think with something like Etsy or any other marketplace, they have full control over everything you do. They can decide what they're showing. And I think it's just more of a professional feel when you've got your own website as well. I think when I promote my website, it feels, yeah, a lot more professional. And I still use, obviously, things like Instagram and Twitter and Facebook to help promote my bags and accessories, but everything goes to the website now. And
oh, so that's really interesting. So when you launched your website, did you turn off Etsy completely?
I think I even still have an Etsy store somewhere. So I don't think it's turned off completely, but yeah, I certainly don't. I don't direct people anymore to any Etsy.
That makes sense. I mean, I think for all the reasons you've shared, and also let's face it, it's also for you much more profitable to sell on a website than it is to pay any marketplace, you know, when you have the fees and everything else. And one thing I am curious about though is, did you find it harder to sort of get people to your website? Because on it, I think on a platform like Etsy or any other online marketplace, obviously people are there to shop, so they go in there and they're going in the search bar and looking whatever they're looking for. Did you find it like you had to market your business differently when you were getting people to a website, if that makes sense?
Yeah, there's that balance, isn't there? Because I suppose they might find you through Etsy, but at the same time they can also lose you and get distracted by the products.
So it's a hard
balance to get, but I think I decided to move to a website and I suppose put all my eggs in one basket, thinking I can build a blog up, I can take people's email addresses, and that at the time was more important to me than people finding me through another marketplace.
That makes a lot of sense. I didn't actually think about it from that aspect, that yes, it's easier for people to find you, but it is also easier to lose them, because you're right. I mean, I've done it when you're looking at something on Etsy and then you scroll down and then it's got like, if you like this, you might also like,
yeah,
and you can end up just clicking further and further away from the thing you were looking at. That does make sense.
I think the other thing with Etsy as well is that it's hard, because I was promoting my bags at a fairly high-end price. I found it was difficult for people to understand the story through Etsy than if I had a website. I could tell more of my story, and I think with something like Etsy, you get a lot of hobbyists on Etsy. And not that I didn't want to be associated, because I think hobbyists get a bit of a bit bad stick sometimes, because the quality can still be there. But sometimes the problem is that they sell their products at a much lower end because they're not in it for a business they just want to keep it as a hobby, and it the money that they are making just pay for their hobby. So that was the other reason I think I wanted to have my own website as well, is because of the cost of the product that I'd created. I wanted it to stand alone and people understand why it was costing that much, rather than being compared to too many other lower price products.
That does make sense as well, because you're right, when on any other marketplace you're comparing, maybe not like for like exactly, but you're comparing obviously different products, whereas on your website, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And did you have to change how you, anything you did in terms of getting people over to your website? Because it sounds like is it mostly social media you've been using to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for a long time, when I first came onto Instagram, it was a very different place than it is now. I mean, I know we go on about the algorithm, but it is true. It was a lot easier. You could get your posts in front of a lot more people. So social media has been one of my main ways of getting new people to see my products. But then at the same time, I think a lot of it is word of mouth, and particularly because of the bags, people will go and talk to their friends, or they'll give them as gifts. And then marketplaces, I think, are quite important as well. I think being able to go to a real market and chat to people and use that as a way of telling your story. I can take email, or I can get emails down and get people onto my email list there. Networking events are really good for speaking to other people. And I mean, I'm based in Cardiff, and there's so many small businesses in Cardiff, and we all talk to each other, and I've built up that network over time, and you get to know people, and you might see them on social media, and they just contact them, meet up, and just start those conversations about what they do and help each other out. And I think that's another thing I've learned over the years, is that is just chatting to other people about their businesses and what they do, and not doing it to get anything out yourself, but just because, I mean, I just love it. I love talking business to people and finding out about how they sell their products or service, and supporting them as much as I can, and they do the same for me. So it's a really great way to support that, to build that network up of especially women, I think, as well. I think we really build our businesses, and the strength of our businesses, up on emotional connections, which you can't just do sometimes over social media. I think it has to be done in real life. It has to be done, and the only way you can do that is through meeting up in real life and having that coffee and chatting, and
absolutely. We were talking a little bit, weren't we, before we started recording, about how much you can learn from each other, which is, you know, the main reason I love this podcast, is because it's genuinely interesting to talk about people's businesses and why people have done what they do, and the fact this, it's just fascinating. And I think, like you say, there's a lot you can learn just by listening to other people.
You really can. And I've got a friend that she started off as my accountability partner. She runs a business producing digital patterns. She's a fashion designer, and we started meeting up every week and bouncing ideas off each other. And it's the most useful thing, because they can, I mean, apart from the fact they can hold you accountable, it's just somebody to talk to, because it can be really lonely working on your own in your business, and sometimes that's all you need, is just to say things out loud and somebody to turn around, especially if it's somebody that's you can really trust and will be honest with you. You can say something and that person can either turn around and say, no, that's not going to work, or they can look at it from a different angle and make suggestions on how you can make something work slightly differently. And not you don't have to listen to them all the time. And I know my accountability partner Alex, there's been times where she's made suggestions and I've gone completely against it. But then there's been other times she's turned around and said, look, you really need to change this because it will make something, it will help you in the long run. And I've listened to her and it's the best thing I've done. And it's worked the other way around as well. So I think accountability partners are one of my biggest suggestions I talk to other people to, because I think it's a really useful and free it's a really free tool that you can get. If you can get that right person as well, it makes such a difference.
Thank you so much. I completely agree. Just having someone you trust that you can just, even if it's just to vent to or whatever it is, but just someone who's going to listen and understand and give advice when you need. Yeah, I think that's invaluable. And I was about to ask you, Elizabeth, what your number one piece of advice would be for other product creators. Would accountability partners be it, or do you have anything else you wanted?
It would, but I've also got another one, and it's something I've done for the last few years, and it would be to have a word of your year, a word of the year, because the last few years I've had a word of the year. This year's focus, and I get it printed out and I put it on my wall. Last year's, I think, was it consistency, and the year before was fearless. And we do, I mean, at the beginning of the year, I do goals, and throughout the year come back to those goals and work on them. But yeah, just having a word of the year really helps, giving that focus. That's something I can keep myself accountable to. And I mean the fearless year was a really important year for me, because I put myself out there and did a talk, and it was about postnatal depression. And I did it in as part of this networking event that I'd been going to for women, mostly business women. And I don't think I would have done it if I hadn't had this word. But it really helped me to push myself out of my comfort zone that year. And likewise, even this year, focus, because I see that word every day. It really encourages and reminds me to be focused. So yeah, a word of the year, I think, is it.
No, I really love that. No one's ever said that before, which I absolutely love. I love it when people have advice in them. I don't know if you've ever listened to the podcast Happy with Gretchen Rubin, because they recommend on that podcast having a word of the year. That's quite a big theme that runs through the podcast. And I really like that. I have done it previously. This year I don't have a word of the year. Because I couldn't find one that resonated, and I feel like I didn't want to sort of have something that I wasn't feeling. But in previous years, I've definitely had.
Yeah, no, it's
ease. I had last year, because it was all about trying to be a bit more relaxed and make things a bit easier on myself.
I think it's such a simple thing. But like things like vision boards as well. I did a vision board this year, and I have it next to my bed, so I see it. It's the first thing I see in the morning, last thing I see at night. And that's really useful, because even just the idea of when you put it together, you can really get focused on what you want and why, and the why, because I think the reason why you're doing what you're doing is so important. And it doesn't have to be just one thing. I mean, I've got things like family and where I see my business, and then even things like self-care, and making sure I make time for that as well. And it is just a reminder, because I think it's so easy to get caught up in what we're trying to do and what we're trying to create business, but having a focus and visualizing. And I really love Carrie from the Female Entrepreneur Association. She's brilliant at talking about visualization and looking into why and the reasons for why we do what we are doing, because there's more to life than just work, and I think we need to remind ourselves of that sometimes.
I think you're right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for everything you shared, Elizabeth. And I love where you've ended. I just think that's really, yeah, like I said, that's advice I haven't had from anyone before. And I really like that, because I think it's something really practical that people can go away and think about doing that they might not have ever considered.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Vicky. It's been lovely chatting.
You're so welcome.
Thank you so much for listening right to the end of this episode. Do remember that you can get the full back catalogue and lots of free resources on my website, vickyweinberg.com. Please do remember to rate and review this episode if you've enjoyed it, and also share it with a friend who you think might find it useful. Thank you again, and see you next week. Hi, this is just a little note to say, if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.